The official Vintage Guitar Magazine 2025 Price Guide has partnered with 33 of the top guitar dealers in the industry to provide the most accurate values for thousands of models. This includes electric guitars, acoustic guitars, basses, amplifiers, effects, mandolins, and banjos. Whether your instrument is an investment or simply a piece you enjoy playing, it's always helpful to know what it's worth. If you're checking out a guitar at your local shop and want to know its value before making the purchase, this guide is your go-to source for all the details. Available in both print and digital editions, you can have the guide right at your fingertips no matter where you go. Use code BUYGUITAR25 to receive 15% off the 2025 price guide when purchased directly from www.vintageguitar.com. This offer expires on January 28th, 2025.
Hello and welcome to Buy That Guitar, presented by Vintage Guitar Magazine. I'm your host, Ram Tooley. This podcast is about the joy of guitar. That includes buying guitars, selling guitars, collecting guitars. We're talking vintage guitars, new guitars, used guitars, pre-war, flat tops, electric Spanish arch tops, custom shop guitars, limited edition guitars, basses, amps, effect pedals, lap steels, mandolins, banjo. If it has strings, we're going to talk about it. I've spent most of my life studying the vintage guitar market. It's truly something I love and I'm passionate about. I can talk guitars all day, and I'm going to. Hey, everybody. Welcome to podcast season number 2. This is the first show. We're starting off big. We got Alan Greenwood on. Alan is the founder and publisher of Vintage Guitar Magazine. So how you doing, Alan?
Doing good.
And this is, everybody out should know that the price guide is now out. 2025 price guide is out. It is available. And this is kind of a kickoff for the season. And we're going to talk about the price guide. I think most of you listening to this podcast are familiar with the price guide. And if you're not, then you should be, because there is probably no greater document ever given to the vintage guitar community than that vintage guitar price guide. It is used by everybody.
Yeah. Before we go any further, though, I want to thank Ram for doing these podcasts. I've been listening to them and they're great information. I'm learning a lot of stuff off of them. And you're just doing a wonderful job, Ram.
All that useless information I've carried in my head for 50 years, I finally have somewhere to put it.
Right? I know that feeling.
So let's go back to the very beginning.
All right.
When did you come up with the idea that the world needed a vintage guitar magazine?
Well, back in the 80s, I was working with this guy. His name was Ross Gordon. We were always talking about starting businesses and stuff, and we always had these harebrained ideas. And back then, there was all these shoppers. Every city had a shopper. You've talked about them on your podcast, like the Penny Saver and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I came up with the idea of a shopper, a regional shopper for all musicians, and I called it the Music Trader. And originally it was, so you could take ads out. The theory was people would take ads out for anything. And I distributed it free in guitar and music stores in about 5 states in the upper Midwest where I'm located. But real quick, we weren't getting any ads. So we started adding articles. And since I was a guitar player and most of the people that were early users of it were guitar players, it quickly changed into just a guitar publication. Mm-hmm. And then the Music Trader was too hard to describe to people, like, you know, what's that mean? So in late 89, we changed the name to Vintage Guitar, which made more sense.
Was it a magazine or was it still a newsprint?
No, it was a newsprint. And we printed it in a little town for 17 years, actually. We used them and it was on what's called a tabloid. And what a tabloid sheet was a full-size newspaper page folded over. That's what a tabloid was. And mm-hmm. Most big cities had tabloid newspapers, you know, the smaller pages for a newspaper.
Right.
And, you know, the first one had 8 pages, I think. And the second one had 4. I learned really quick that there wasn't a lot of stuff out there. But over time, you know, we started adding pages. And I did it part-time for 6 years. And I think in 93, it got to a point where I decided I could, you know, quit my day job and do this on its own. And it just kept growing from there.
So at the very first vintage guitar magazines, they were mainly ads, right? And then a few columns put in here and there.
Yeah. My original thought was it would be all ads, like a shopper was. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't finding anybody willing to pay to put ads in it. So we started adding articles. And a local guy named Bob DeKippy was one of the first writers and he's big into guitars and stuff. So we, like I said, right from the start, we were articles, and mainly the articles. I mean, we didn't do any interviews or anything. It was just about whatever the guys wanted to talk about. We had articles about blues records. We had articles about different brands, stuff like that. And as we got to be more popular, we got some more writers. And one of the first was a guy named Willie Mosley, who's been with us forever.
Everybody's favorite. People talk about Mosley. I remember reading when it was the tabloid. I remember he would do articles. He was big into the Mosrite. Remember, he was really into Mosrite guitars. And
well, his last name was Mosley.
Yeah.
But he was big into house brands and stuff, which we covered a lot. But he was
He wrote that book about the Bakersfield guitars.
Yeah. He was the first one to really go out and start getting us some interviews. Mm-hmm. So then we started, you know, adding the players and stuff and kind of involved into the mix we have now.
Now, you told me a story we were talking one time. You say when you first started, you guys had a fax machine, but you couldn't afford one that had the cutter.
I bought it was a thermal paper fax. You bought the paper on a roll.
Right.
And it printed with heat. And I saved $25 or something by not getting the one that cut the pages. And when we finally moved the business out of the house, we had a long hallway. We had the fax machine at that hall. In the end of that hallway, we'd come in Monday morning. There'd be this incredibly long thermal paper fax laying on the floor. And then Jolene was one of my early employees. She would spend Monday morning cutting these into pages.
Mm-hmm. And these were the ads, people sending in ads?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Everybody back then, the dealers would handwrite their ads. Some of them would type them up. Nobody had computers yet.
Right.
And they would fax them to us. And then we had a handful of women here. About four or five women worked for me on a freelance kind of thing. They'd come in, get these sheets, go home and type them into a computer file.
Mm-hmm.
And I would pay them by the page, and then we would download them into a software that we could print them out on and stuff. So it was quite a process.
That must've been fun as you saw circulation grow and you saw more and more people getting interested in more and more writers coming in. That must've been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
When did you guys go from the tabloid to the actual magazine? 2001-ish?
Yeah. In the 90s, we grew really fast in the 90s. We were doubling our circulation every year. And we were doing over 200 pages of that tabloid size, and 130 of those pages were dealer ads. And people got to realize this is before the internet, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how people found stuff. But it got to the point where in early, about 2002, we switched printers to a place down in Missouri and started doing still a tabloid size, but we were doing heat set press, it's called, which is what a magazine is.
Mm-hmm.
The old newsprint people used to complain to me their fingers would be black, you know, after mm-hmm. flipping through all the pages because the ink would smear on their fingers.
I remember when it was still oversized, you could go in and buy it. I remember that's when I really started reading Vintage Guitar Magazine. I remember going into the bookstores, you know, and I used to love, my kids would be looking for books, and I'd run over to the magazine side. And they'd be the nice oversized Vintage Guitar Magazine with a beautiful cover.
Yeah.
And that's when I discovered it. I was like, I had no idea there was a Vintage Guitar Magazine.
Oh, yeah. That was, we grew a lot of circulation that way. How we grew it in the early days, and we still do this, was giving them away at guitar shows.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we reached so many people.
And we give away quite a few at those guitar shows. And by the end of the trade, you know, at the end of the show, they're all gone. You know, we may bring in 10 cases.
Yeah.
They're all gone. People want it.
Yep. We still do that. And then it got to the thing with the tabloid size. Back in those days, there was all kinds of printers that did that size. But, you know, as things went more to the internet and stuff, more print shops got out of it and stuff. So if you want to print that size now, you're the oddball and you got to buy odds paper and stuff like that. But
right.
So that's why we're to the size we are now.
And then when did you guys go digital? Where you also put out a about 1995-ish or so, or way after?
You mean a digital magazine?
Yeah, we actually, it was available both as a print and digital.
Oh, that's probably just been in the 10, 15 years. I couldn't give you an exact date.
Oh, okay.
We first got a website in like 95.
Yeah, that's what I remember. I remember the first digital or the store and all that.
Yep, yep.
So today, would you say most of the subscriptions are digital or are they still print?
No, people don't read digital magazines. Our print is our bread and butter. You can get it digitally, and we provide it digitally to anybody who subscribes to the print. And we do have quite a few people that just do the digital, but there's a lot of companies that have tried to make digital magazines work, and it just doesn't work.
It's hard. And you think about the people that love guitars and vintage guitars. We're old school. You know, we like reading books. We like reading, playing real guitars. We like reading real magazines. You know.
Well, the beauty of what we do, we're a niche market. And the magazines that really got killed by the internet were your news ones, your sports ones, your gossip kind of ones. I mean, I can go on the internet and find 1,000 sites that do sports now.
Right, right.
But if you wanted what we do, we only print it, you know. And like you said, you went to the bookstore or the newsstand. And if you go to the newsstand now, you'll notice most of the magazines are niche magazines.
Right. You know? Or there are just so few bookstores that really, you know, that was a, like for me, I used to go, I was a magazine guy. I used to love picking out, you know, I got my vintage guitar magazine. I got my Civil War. I got my scientific magazines. You know, I would just load up on these things. And then go home and, you know, and that was like, I loved reading magazines. It was about, I think, in the late 90s is when I discovered what you guys put out called the Price Guide.
Yeah.
And that to me was, so it starts out as an article, right? 1988, you have an article, it was called Asking Price, Selling Price.
Yeah. Yep. I was just going through dealer ads and back then, you know, all the big dealers put out flyers every month. Some of them were quite elaborate, like Grunes flyers. They were full color and stuff like that. Mandolin Brothers did it, you know, and Elderly Instruments. And we would get all these things, and I would just kind of compile these pricings and put them in one spot.
And so the earliest one that I found, well, I think I started buying when they still weren't, it was before 2001 because they weren't, it was like volume four or something. But there is a 1993 edition that's out there, and that one says it has 3,000 prices, you know, like you have 3,000 guitars listed in there. And it's amazing that today, you know, they're well over 10,000 listings in the guide.
Oh yeah.
It's amazing how this guide evolved and from just focusing on gold, you know, golden era blue chip stuff. And now, you know, we look at everything in that secondary market. Only 2% of that guide is guitars over $50,000.
Mm-hmm.
And about 1% is 40 to 50K. 2% is 30 to 40K. 2% is 20 to 30K. And then 6% is 10 to 20. So that means almost 80% of that guide is stuff that is under $10,000. And that's where the utilitarian value, like the most people using that guide, they're not really, I mean, yeah, they're looking up what their 55 Stratocaster is worth, but they're really, the dealers are looking at the secondary market. They're looking at the, you know, and 22% is under $1,000 in there.
Yeah, that's where a guide like that is handy. I mean,
right.
Listening to other podcasts, the dealers say, yeah, I know the prices on this, the high-end classic stuff, you know.
Right. That doesn't take me any effort at all to get that numbers.
Right.
It's getting, what is the price of these $1,000 to $5,000 guitars?
Mm-hmm.
You know, to getting them exact, you know, getting them to where they're concrete. When you talk to the dealers, they use that guide mainly. That's where they really are focused a lot of the time is looking up what something costs. And it doesn't have to be a vintage guitar to be in the vintage guitar guide. You know, we have plenty of stuff that was made 5-6 years ago that's, you know, custom shop stuff or, you know, and one of the hardest things is, you know, I get the emails, you get the emails. You don't have my Stratocaster in there. You know, well, then you explain, well, it's a one of a very small run.
Yeah.
It's, you know, we only have 660 pages, you know, so we, to put something in, usually got to take something out and or consolidate things. So yes, you know, if you have some rare run, something, you know, Guitar Center, silver something, whatever anniversary, it may not be in there, but we're pretty focused on what those are. You know, we're pretty focused on those type of instruments. And you'll find plenty of comparable ones. You always get the email, why don't you have my whatever Strat?
Yeah. Well,
and you're like, well, it's actually a great, you know, it's a very rare Strat. You know, they only made 50 of them or 100 of them. And they're not, they don't show up in the marketplace. If it shows up in the marketplace, we have it in there. You know, if I get data that says this sold, we put it in there. So
my feeling on a price guide, though, is if I'm out pawn shopping or hitting guitar shops or something, and I'm going to see something hanging on the wall and I just have no idea what it's worth. So, you know, my goal initially was just to arm the guy with some knowledge.
Right.
And that was kind of the thing too. When the magazine started out, you had a handful back in the '80s, you had a handful of big dealers that were able to deal with the international market and stuff like that. Like when in the, you know, in the late '80s, there was the Japanese were buying so much Strats. There were Strats, meaning they were buying everything, American hot rods,
right,
jukeboxes and everything. But the average guy on the street, he couldn't deal with them. So he was like a picker for these. So he would find these guitars and then sell them to these big dealers who would turn around and sell them, you know, to the buyers. Then we come along and all of a sudden, you know, the average guy has pretty much got a direct line to these buyers.
Right, right.
Because they were all subscribing to the magazine.
And people now, it was information. Like all of a sudden now, you know that,
right. You
know, supply and demand. Like what's, if something is very, very expensive, it's probably because there's very low supply of that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the interesting. Now, the first guys, one of the first things that a vintage guitar guy did was it gave you an index where they compiled 42 guitars. These were the blue chip guitars. And it was just an index to show you how the market was really moving.
Right.
And you can see through every guide, you add that extra year. And it's a nice visual.
And that was just three brands too. That was your classics. That was
right. And because that was the, if you think about it, the vintage guitar market really was Gibson, Fender, and Martin.
Martin, yep.
And one of the things is this season, what we're going to do is we're going to show some love to Gretsch and Rickenbacker because they are now big players in the market as well.
Mm-hmm.
We call them the big five. And nowadays, I think every guide from here on out will always show you an index that has the big five, you know, the Fender, Gibson, Gretsch, Martin, and Rickenbacker.
Well, Rickenbacker's always had a nice image to me. They're just, their production was never that huge.
Right. They're very small. In fact, they were, you know, out of the whole secondary market, I keep throwing this number out and I get it wrong every time because I just take it off the top of my head. I'm going to give you the right number today. So for a whole year, I just compiled everything out of the, what I call the used guitar market, you know, like what's available out there. Just, you know, I just kept a spreadsheet. I had like 10, almost 15,000 entries, everything I saw for sale. And then I looked at brand. 33% of everything that's available right now is Gibson.
Mm-hmm.
19% is Fender. Martin is 9%. Epiphone is 4%. Gretsch is 3%. Guild comes next at 3%. Rickenbacker, 2%. Ibanez at 3%. Then you get to Danos, which are 2%, Silvertone. And then everything else, PRS, Yamaha, Ovation, Harmony, PV, Takamine, Taylor, G&L, all 1% or less.
So this was stuff you saw for sale at a given point in time?
Yeah, no, this is like my whole spreadsheet that I compiled everything in order to compile the prices.
Uh-huh.
You know, every 1952 Les Paul, I put it in there, how much it's worth, or what it's being sold for, or what it's sold for.
When you think about it, you know, Gibson's been around for, what, 120 years?
Right.
125 years, and it just, I mean, they're just the guitars that they
right.
kicked out in Fender.
Yep. And that's why, like, the very first show we did in season one was, why do these two brands dominate? Well, there's a reason why, but Martin is actually, you know, less than 10% of the market. And then Epiphone and everything else is under that.
Well, you know, Martin's, you know, they now have cheaper models and stuff, less expensive models, but for a long time they didn't. So,
right.
You know, everything they had was high dollar. And as we've talked about many times in the magazine, I mean, there wasn't a lot of guys buying D45s back in the 30s, you know, they didn't
right.
have the money for it and stuff. So,
yeah. And that 42 guitar index really looked at, I think we eliminate the high end stuff like the 50 Broadcaster or the 54, the first Stratocaster.
Yeah.
But you had, you know, like a good general population of vintage, you know, what would consider blue chip vintage.
And I think Gil Henry, who helped me with the price guide before you did for 20 years, he helped me with it. He came up with, he had a lot of input into that. And I think all those guitars when we started were under 10,000 bucks or something.
Right. That was what most people were looking for, hoping to find.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always did something that was different. I did what was called the 3,000 guitar index. This is my own when I was doing my own thing. And it really came in handy because it was the broad market. It had everything. It had the highest Explorers in there, 59 Explorer.
Yeah.
But it also had everything else,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so it was a super broad market.
Yeah.
And now we show both in the introduction to the price guide. We show that 42, which is the blue chip. We also show the broad market.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at that broad market, you see that they follow pretty closely through the years, except for that 2006, 2007, 2008 bubble, as we call it. People don't like to call it a bubble, but it was a bubble.
Oh, absolutely.
And then it corrects back down. And then you see about 2013, the high-end blue chip stuff is now back on trending exactly the same as the broad market.
Yeah.
So there really was no bubble for the broad market, you know, for everything. It was really just that blue chip stuff, the Stratocasters, Les Pauls, and they really are the ones that went up in price, and there's a reason for it.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about that. Like right now, and this is the first time this guy, the 2025, is the first time we showed how the stock market relates to the guitar market.
Mm-hmm.
For years, there has always been this intuitive, it's been wrong, that when the stock market is going up, the vintage guitar market is going up. That is counterintuitive. It's exact opposite. It turns out it is the opposite. And when the vintage guitar market first started, with 1970, George Grun opens his first store, there's a boom. The first boom comes in 1970 to 1975, in what we call the folk rock era,
mm-hmm.
where all the pre-war flat tops and Telecasters and gold tops
yep.
jump 20 to 25% a year. You know, that's all of a sudden there's a vintage guitar market. And then the oldest people in that market, they got in 1970-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get 1975. We have the first where everything kind of stabilizes. And according to George Grun, that's because baby boomers were now graduating from college, getting married, having families, and guitars, you know, they were no longer, you know, the Stephen Stills weren't out there, you know, influencing enough people to go out and buy all the new, you know, all these old vintage flat tops and stuff. So it stabilizes. And then you get for a long period, pretty long, almost 10 years, where prices just basically keep pace with inflation.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have that boom. And then the second wave comes, according to George Broom, in 1984, when the baby boomers have a midlife crisis. And they start finding that they can beat the stock market by buying guitars, 1984-ish.
Right.
That also corresponds with Stevie Ray Vaughan and Japan, and the U.S. dollar is now weak in 1985.
Yes.
And that is where everything changes in our market. And we get everything. Now, that is very similar to what's going on now, where the stock market is going up and the guitar market is going up. 1993, the downturn happens. That's when baby boom, like we say the baby boomers turned 50, according to George Grun. They're retiring. They're now investing in IRAs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get that at that same time, you get the stock market goes crazy with the dot-com boom in 1995.
Yeah.
And that was the first time in that first couple of years, guitars jumped 30 to 50% in a mini bubble. Then you get, bang, it goes 1997, we recover, goes down 20%. We recover very nicely just 3 years later. And then now I think is where the stock market really influences the guitar market because we get what's called the lost decade. From 1999 to 2009, the S&P 500 was basically flat or lost. You know, it ends in 10 years with a minus, first time ever. And that coincides with the big boom we have that rises to 2008 bubble, where prices of stuff, you know, like in 2007, things double in price, things triple in price. Some customs are going crazy. And that's what, and then we get the 2008 bubble, and then that corrects everything. And then the bull market starts in 2009 to 2020. And I show in the thing, because I show the S&P 500 versus the guitar indexes, that when the stock market goes crazy from 2009 to 2020, the vintage guitar market is flat.
Oh, yeah.
It does not vary.
You know, we noticed that when you're talking investment grade guys, you know, in the, you're talking about the dot-com bust. I remember when that happened. You know, those guys were sticking all their money in the stock market because that's where they could make money.
Right.
And then when that went bust, then they started sticking it in guitars and watches and all that other stuff.
Right. That tangible asset, you know, and guitars are a lot easier to store than cars.
Yeah.
The guitar market very closely, the classic car market. Classic car market always recovers faster because there are more people that love old cars than guitars. You know, everybody who's a guitar collector also loves old cars, but not every old car collector loves guitars.
Right.
So we always lag about behind that. But it's counterintuitive. Like people always think, oh, when the stock market was going crazy, everybody's out buying guitars. No. It's only when the stock market is flat and you do better buying other things. And as an asset class, vintage guitars, you know, they the best ones, you know, we talk about that all the time, what the percent or the turn rate is on them. Normally, you don't do better. The stock market will always do your best. You know, small cap or S&P 500 will always beat everything else. You know, that's gold, property, whatever it is. And guitars are kind of there in the property, you know, like the 5%, you're lucky, you're doing well. You know, 5 to 7%, you're doing well. And that's kind of, for the first time ever, we put that S&P 500 curve in there to show the relationship with the guitar indexes. And you can see a very, very pattern. It is a pattern. It does happen time and time again. So,
yeah, and that 3000 index of yours is much better indication of what the market's doing, you know, overall, because like you said, it's, well, number one, it's got 3000 price points in it instead of 47. But one thing too, on that index that we used all those years with the prime stuff in it, and it had bubble in it, but if you take like a ruler and lay it on the growth before that bubble, mm-hmm. it almost lines up exactly with the growth after that bubble.
Oh yeah. Right. And that's why the growth we had in 2022 was really, everything was so undervalued that it was only natural just getting back to an equilibrium point. And you're right. If you just draw, if you go from 2001 up all the way, you'll see that we crossed that line about 2024. And that means that at the average growth that we expected over the history of vintage guitars, that growth that was constant, would be right where we are right now.
Mm-hmm.
That bubble really did knock people for a loop. And it took the confidence out of the vintage guitar. You know, I remember writing in 2000, whatever it was, 19, that whatever I paid for my Stratocaster, I'll probably never get that money back. You know, and then that's why I wrote that now's the time to buy that vintage guitar book, because all of a sudden, bang, something happened in 2020.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, we started coming back up. And the COVID thing really was the difference, you know. So that last, I would say the last 4 or 5 years has been the greatest growth ever in vintage guitar values, but that's not due to over-speculation
right.
The way it was up going up to 2008. There was no support for why the price of a Gibson Custom from 58, why it was double in value, triple in value year to year. There was no support for that, but there's always been support for what's going on now because everything was so undervalued. Les Paul's late 50s Stratocasters were so undervalued. And now everything is just kind of coming back to where it would have been.
Yeah. And some of the controversies we've heard over the years too, especially that, well, the first time I really heard it was after the dot-com bust and all the money guys got in the market. And then again, in that bubble you're talking about, 2008, was the speculators, you know, versus the musicians. And,
right. They elbowed, their way into these guitar shows and they bought up everything they could.
Going back a step further, that was when Japanese were buying all the guitars, you know, the collectors here in the States were not happy with it because in their mind, that stuff was leaving the country and it was never coming back. And I remember going to guitar shows back mm-hmm. then, and the guitar show booths, I think, are like 10 feet wide or something like that. But these Japanese guys have a couple of them and they would be totally empty. There wouldn't be nobody in there mm-hmm. at the beginning. And that by the end of the show, the floor would be just solid cases, Fender cases, Gibson cases, you know, and that's all going out of the country.
Yep.
The good news is an awful lot of that stuff has come back as the Japanese economy changed and stuff.
Right.
But the speculators thing, you know, you mentioned George Gruen, he's made this point a few times too. You know, you always get these comments from people, they should let musicians play them and stuff. Well, the investors on that high-end stuff, they're basically preserving these things.
Right. You know, if somebody takes care of it and puts it under their bed, that's fine. It'll come back. If you remember on the second episode of last season, we talked to David Davidson and he says he sees the same guitars come back. You know, he sells them, they come back.
Yep.
David Davidson once told me something very interesting. He always knew when something goofy was going to happen with the stock market, when he saw all the Wall Street guys coming in and buying guitars.
Yeah.
He said, I knew then something was coming.
A little insider trading there.
Yeah. But that's the thing. Oh, another thing about this 3000 guitar index. I actually, Doug and I have this contest. And nobody's done it yet. I'm waiting for somebody to send in the actual number because it's not 3000. I think it started out as 3000 like 5-6 years ago. But every year I add more and more to it, you know, because anything that's significant, I add to that list, you know, so it's, that offer still stands. If somebody emails me the exact number, the first guy to the exact number of how many guitars are actually in that, It's a lot of work. It is.
Because it is printed in the price guide.
Yeah, we have all the guitars in there in the price guide. You'll have to do the math where you have to say, well, it's 1948 to 19 whatever. You're going to have to actually, each one is in there. And if you say, the first person email with the exact number, the real number, I will send you something special. I'll send you some of my books or who knows, whatever I can find. I'll just throw it in a box and send it to you.
Do you know the number?
I know the number, what it was like 2 years ago. So I'll have to just add, from where I was, I just had to add it. Because this year I added quite a bit. Anything that turns out to be significant, I'll add to that list. Mm-hmm. Because, like this year I added Guild stuff and I added some Epiphone flat top stuff because Epiphones and Guilds became very important.
Yeah, they're all.
Before they weren't important. Now they're important. So when I put it in, that's a lot of work because I have to backfill all the data, going all the way back to 2001. My actually 3000 goes all the way back to, 1989 or something like that. But I had to backfill it every year. So I had to look at every single guide. So I don't want to add something to that list.
Right.
But it is a little more than 3000. So whoever does that, I got a surprise. I'll come your way.
The official Vintage Guitar Magazine 2025 price guide has partnered with 33 of the top guitar dealers in the industry to provide the most accurate values for thousands of models. This includes electric guitars, acoustic guitars, basses, amplifiers, effects, mandolins, and banjos. Whether your instrument is an investment or simply a piece you enjoy playing, it's always helpful to know what it's worth. If you're checking out a guitar at your local shop and want to know its value before making the purchase, this guide is your go-to source for all the details. Available in both print and digital editions, you can have the guide right at your fingertips no matter where you go. Use code BUYGUITAR25 to receive 15% off the 2025 price guide when purchased directly from www.vintageguitar.com. This offer expires on January 28th, 2025.
Well, and one thing for the listeners to realize is we're not just the high dollar stuff. I'm not a high dollar, I don't dabble in that high dollar market myself, and there's just so many different routes of collecting. And the thing with collecting guitars is, and I've heard many of your other podcast guests meant, buy what you like,
Right.
And
I love it.
If you're in the flat tops and can't afford old Martins, but the old Epiphones sound pretty good too, and they're cool guitars, So.
And I think I've had at least two or three podcasts where the guest has said, Guild, that's where to be. And that's where to be. And that's why I added the ones that, people really want.
Well, so, with someone like Gil that has changed hands several times over the years, do you draw? I mean, is there eras that just aren't popular?
Yeah. In this year's guide, we do two pullouts that are totally separate than normally would be put in. I added in the guilds that matter, mm-hmm. the ones that people are buying, that the dealers are giving me info from, that the prices jump on. If anything jumps at least 10 to 20% in a year, it's probably going to get added to the 3000 guitar because that meant it was a significant mover this mm-hmm. era. But this year, flat tops just had a great year. High end flat tops, the stuff that was kind of dormant for years. So we did a pull out on that. We actually did a chart on that, which shows all the, like the Martins and the Gibsons and stuff like that. And where they are, I didn't really do flat tops at all because I didn't care about them, when I did my own personal stuff. In the last couple of years, I've really grown to love flat tops and watch that market. Remember Dave Hunter wrote a book called 365 Guitars You Must Play Before You Die or something like that?
Uh-huh.
And so that was my first list. As I took David Hunter's book, and that was my first, before I had the 3000, it was like 365 items. And I used that as my first index to get just a general market. And it had like 1954 country westerns in there. And it had a, mm-hmm. Just rare stuff that I would never even know about. And that's really where that list kind of generated from that. And it just grew because I had no idea what was meaningful in flat tops until I read David Hunter's book. And I'm like, oh, okay. So there is a reason why people want a 42 D28. There is a reason why people want the Dove or the, so that's kind of where that comes from too.
Yep. Well, you mentioned earlier, Groon George says that he really got a start. I think he started out of Chicago.
Yeah. He was going to the university.
Was the acoustics. So basically the seeds of the vintage guitar collecting hobby started with
acoustics. Right. And it was pre-war stuff from, and any, like we all collect stuff. We know there's a big difference. Like even a collector today, when he plays a pre-war Martin or a pre-war Gibson, it's magical. There's something magical about that guitar. Mm-hmm. And people knew that.
Well, then the difference between an acoustic and electric is just the artistry in holding it. And even back then, the acoustic market, the early stuff was driven by who was playing what, you know, the bluegrass guys and stuff like that. And the folk guys really drove that. It's the same on the reason we love Strats and Les Pauls is because of the people who played them.
And they were just, they were unpopular at the time. And then they, you know, they were just scarcer, just acoustic guitars in general. You think about Gibson's now owned by Norland. Fenders, they never really did anything cool with flat tops. And then you have all these other, you know, the Baldwins now own Gretsch and all these things like the craftsmanship, even in Martin, craftsmanship just goes the way Brazilian rosewood's gone. A lot of the luthier adjustments and stuff. It's almost like the car industry. You think of like the 73 Mercury Montego, you know, then you think of the 73 Gibson, whatever. It's just not the same craftsmanship. And so people will naturally look for something like, hey, look at this.
Right.
You know. This 52, whatever, you know, 00028, you know, wow.
One thing we should talk about too is what we think of the future for collectible guitars. And, you know, for years, people have been ringing the bell that it's the guitar is dying. You know, it started with the synthesizers in the 80s.
Right.
And rap music and a lot of people are creating stuff with electronics and stuff. But why would these younger guys want Strats from the 50s and stuff? Well, I watch a lot of bands on TV on late night shows or, you know, Sunday morning shows or whatever, Saturday morning, Saturday Night Live, whatever. And almost all the time they're playing Tellys, Stratocasters, Les Pauls and stuff like that.
It's the same thing with the cars too. You know, like who's going to buy the 1966 Mustang?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a big, you know, people want it.
Right.
They know what it brings. They knew the looks you get. You know, but it's also there's such a joy in playing a vintage guitar. It's a very spiritual thing, and people find that, you know, even though they may not have been born, they may not have ever listened to Jimi Hendrix, you know, but they just know that there's something about that guitar. It stood the test of time. It looks the same as it did now as it did in 55. You know.
Yep, and you mentioned the pandemic, and another thing that happened with the pandemic was it was huge growth in people picking up a guitar for the first time. I think Fender had one of their best years ever. And a lot of those people, it's just like the 60s. Everybody, after the Beatles, everybody and their brother wanted to play guitar, and most of them dropped out, but a lot of them stayed. So you got these new guitar players coming up. Same thing happened more recently. And it's actually now it's easier to learn how to play a guitar than it was in the 60s. The cheaper guitars are better built. And with the internet and YouTube, you got all these tools to learn how to play. Michael Wright talks about in the 60s, I think the peak guitar production was in 68. But unbeknownst to the manufacturers at that time, the peak guitar buying was in like 66. You know,
you know what I mean? Like that's why there's so many, and that's why there's no 68 Stratocasters.
Right.
Yeah, I think there's 50. I think Barney Roche told me there's only 54 were made.
Yeah,
and that's a great because they just didn't make them. They didn't need to.
Yeah.
They hadn't sold.
Right, and that also coincides with the end of the 60s, with the big mega corporations buying these guitar companies. Like you talked about Baldwin and CBS buying Fender and Norland buying Gibson. You know,
right. In 1970, things change again, right? You know, the Beatles break up and there's all kinds of things going on. And then like George Grum points out that these guys, by 75, you're in your real life now. All these hippies are now, you know, raising children and working 9-to-5 business.
Yeah.
You know, Jimi Hendrix said, don't point your businessman suit tie, or whatever it was, you know. And that's the corporate, you know, they become corporate.
Mm-hmm.
And that just dies out. You know, there's no, people aren't really craving. It wasn't until 85 all of a sudden grunge kind of comes back in and guitar playing kind of comes back, you know, no more of this new wave stuff that was just very electronic. People start playing guitar again.
Mm-hmm.
And Stevie Ray Vaughan and all that stuff, and G.E. Smith on Saturday Night Live playing the 52 Telecaster on TV.
Yep. Our number one watched video, it's got over 1 million views on YouTube, is G.E. Smith with the Bloomfield Telecaster showing off and stuff. But, you know, another point too I'd like to make is, you know, guitar collecting or just amassing more than one or two guitars is expensive. And so we did, I've always felt it was people in their late 30s before they started whatever hobbies they were getting into, because they finally, you know, a little more settled in, they have a little spending cash now, and they want to buy the stuff that they wanted or had when they were young. So,
and that's why we're seeing the 80s, you know, the 80s stuff that was kind of like $2,000 under is now $5,000, because people are now, and that's one of the things that we've done in the price guide. I've really been happy with.
Right.
Just the contacts I've made in that world, in that 80s, 90s guitar world, because that was a whole untapped market.
Yeah. Well,
you know, people are, boy, are they appreciative that we're really focused now, you know, and I spend more time there, like I said, chasing those kind of prices than I do Stratocasters and Telecasters, because I can get Telecaster numbers by just picking up the phone.
If you were a teenager in the 90s, you know, you're getting into your late 30s now. And that's what you want. You know, one point I want to bring up, I've got a 66 Stratocaster I just love. It's one of my favorite pieces. But I started the magazine in 1986. That guitar was only 20 years old.
Right.
When I started that, and it was already considered a classic, you know. And that was right after CBS bought it, so it wasn't as popular as the earlier ones. But so I listened to some of the dealers, and this is, been a running discussion since I started the magazine, is what is vintage? And I think a lot of people say, well, it's something that you can't get in that configuration anymore. Well, that doesn't really work anymore because of all the reissues.
Right.
So when you get these dealers kind of poo-pooing stuff from the 90s or whatever, you got to realize that that's vintage to these guys who are coming up with the money now, you know?
And technically, I think, you know, we always say, what is the definition of vintage? It's always been something made 40 years before. So that means 85.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. 85 is it can be considered vintage.
I've always kind of felt if it's worth more now than it was when it came out, you know, mm-hmm. And you could use absolute dollars there or whatever. I mean, if a guitar was $300 in the 90s, and if it's selling for $750 or $1,000 now, you know, it's got something going for it, you know, other than just age. So,
and a lot of, there is some old school dealers or people that say, well, if it was made after 1970, it's not vintage. You know, I'm okay. It's, you know, that's true.
Well, and those guys make good money dealing in that market, but
right.
the average reader of the magazine or listening to this podcast, anything before 1970, they're, you know, that's priced out of that market.
Right. And it's, you know, amazing. Like, you know, maybe, you know how we used to like look down our noses at early 70s Stratocasters.
Well, I was just going to mention that.
Yeah, I mean, and, you want to get a good, cool custom color, they're $15,000.
Well, and my point on that always was, I want to get, I'm a collector, I love Stratocasters, say, I want to get the oldest one I can afford. I can't afford the 60s. So they started buying the 70s stuff. And I know a couple of dealers that made a good living buying up 70s stuff when nobody wanted it.
Mm-hmm.
And just sat on it and made good money when that came around. And people want to buy, if you're a collector, you want to buy the oldest, cleanest thing you can get.
And you know, people always say, oh, well, where's everything going? You know, like, what's the price of this going to be in 5 years, 10 years? Well, we don't know. We don't have a crystal ball.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't ever say that we will know. But as we mentioned, to know where something's going, you have to know where it's been. So if something has never been worth anything, you know, like I'm not going to pick on K or, you know, silver tone or something like that. But that'll be it. There's like it's got a support and it stays about there, you know?
Yeah.
And, but the Stratocaster, it's always, always desirable. Somebody will always be willing, you know, that wants that Stratocaster.
Great. You know, you're talking about K's and those budget brands, you know, they made all these brands for everybody else. Even Carp auto parts stores sold guitars back in the 60s. If you had shelf space, you got a guitar with your name on it and sold it. But, you know, they were made as budget guitars. I remember in the 80s, 90s, early 2000s, we'd do these articles on these obscure brands, not obscure brands, but lesser known brands. And there was always a flurry of activity around them. K made some cool stuff, especially like the Archtop stuff they did. And But if that's your entry point in the collecting, that's great.
We make sure that the price guy tells you what that guitar is worth, and it's worth something. It's worth more than a lot of other things, you know.
Great. Another point for your beginning, people who want to get into collecting or want to do more of it or expand, you know, these guys with these beautiful collections, they didn't start out with those beautiful collections. They bought an old Strat that maybe was beat up, and they traded it up into something they found nicer, and they just kind of worked their way into these beautiful collections. And it's just a patience thing. Stuff will come your way.
Yep. And just the love of the guitar, you know. Right. If you love that Goya, that's a $300 guitar, it may be magical.
Well, two, the most valuable collectible, the most valuable electrics out there and stuff are the mint things. You know, it was under somebody's bed for 30 years or whatever.
Right.
But I've also heard people say the reason that guitar is in mint shape is because it was a dog. Nobody wanted to play it.
And I'm, you know, we're not really supposed to say that out loud, but that's proven true for me. You know, some of my best looking stuff that's mint, it's mint for a reason.
Yeah.
And the same thing with all my refins, you know, the ones that were beat to hell, it was refined, but it was played every night, and it was played because it was a keeper.
Right. Well, I heard you were talking to Rick Hoag. I was listening to that one recently, and you guys were talking about just the magic of playing a vintage instrument, and it's one that's worn out. I love a well-worn back of a well-worn back. It's just, and if you grab you talk about 70s guitars or late 60s, I got a 69 Telecaster, and there's just so much finish on the back of the neck. It's not even really that much fun to play. Mm-hmm. But that 66 Strat I have, that's been played to hell, and that's a fun guitar to handle.
If you're a player and you want to play these guitars, the more they've been played means that there's something there.
Mm-hmm. Especially on the acoustics.
Yeah. And when it comes to, I know we're not really supposed to say this out loud, but custom colored Stratocasters, if they sat under a bed, you know, the person bought that to be out in front to play it and to have people go, wow. But if he didn't play it, more than likely it was a dog. But the collectors, you know, the guys that want the museum pieces, they're probably not going to play it. They're probably going to put it in a glass case and hang it up over something.
Yeah, that's understandable. I guess the point I'm trying to make is, you know,
right,
because something's beat up, don't overlook.
In fact, the beat up ones are the ones that will blow your mind.
Yeah. Well, that's true too. Just cleaning them up. Sometimes you find an old guitar someplace and it's just cleaning it up and restringing it and resetting it and stuff. It's just like magic.
What are the things, you know, because I have that data that there's 3,000 and whatever number you guys got to tell me.
Yeah.
I have data that's just expansive. And because of that, I have that data, I can calculate everything. I can calculate 10-year return rates. I can calculate 20-year return rates. And like most, like the stock market, everybody always says, what's my return? You know, and there's a big difference between a 10-year return and a 20-year return because you have a longer period. And for us, the guitar world, a 20-year return also includes that 2008 up and down. So I like to look at 10-year returns for guitars. Mm-hmm. And I sent you a little spreadsheet there that for what we have. And we're going to share this with everybody. I want you guys to buy the price guide and you'll get more info, more detailed info about these guitars. But I'm going to tell you, if you bought these guitars 10 years ago, you would have done excretionally well with your collection. And the number one, the best return you could ever get with a guitar, a vintage guitar, it turns out it is the Gibson EDS 1275, the double neck wonder that everybody knows from Jimmy Page.
The hollow body.
But the ones that were made in the hollow body ones, those things return 27% a year in the last 10 years. Every year for 10 years, these things were doubling in price every 3 years. And that's crazy for a guitar. Does that mean you should go out and buy one now? If you can find one,
right,
it's going to be worth a lot. But those are over $150,000 most of the time now.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the next one. This is about a $25,000 guitar. It is the old Rickenbacker model 1993 RM. These Rose Morse guitars with a flat tailpiece. Those things are 18% a year returning right now. In the last 10 years. And that's really because Rickenbackers have really jumped in the last year. They were flat forever. And then in this last 5 years, Rickenbackers came alive. Now they rival Fender for performance. And then, of course, there's Rose Morse 1993 R-tail pace, 16%. And then we get to a Fender Jazzmaster that's got common color. That thing has a return rate. That thing averages about 15% a year. And then, of course, on the cover this year, the price guide, we have that 66 Flying V. If you see it on the cover, it's because it meant it really did something that year. At least we're trying to do that, you know, just to give you a hint. And if you own those 66 Flying Vs, that thing is returning about 15% a year now. The earliest
one. Weren't those made from leftover parts?
No, these ones were the ones that they came out in 66 with the triangle knobs, and they put the AB ones on them. They're not the early 60s ones that Explorers, they redid them. These are the ones at Hendrix. You see Hendrix playing one. It's all painted up. But they had nice colors. They were beautiful guitars. Flying Vs are flying. They're soaring. 66, 67, 68. Those, what we call the triangle knob configurations. And then here's one that's kind of will blow your mind. A Jackson Soloist from 1984 with a Floyd Royce has a 14% return rate in the last 10 years, every year.
Yeah, and that's a much cheaper guitar than the other.
Yeah, that's a $6,000 guitar. That Flying V is going to cost you $67,000 above, you know, almost $65,000. That Common Color Jazzmaster is about $20,000 now.
Mm-hmm.
There's two guitars here. There's a $6,000 guitar that has a return of 14%, and that's that Jackson Soloist with a Floyd Royce. And then you get that Ibanez Lawsuit Era Destroyer, the 2459.
Mm-hmm.
Almost 14% a year in the last 10 years. Insane, huh?
Yeah, didn't Ibanez make all three of those?
Yeah, and they had different, sometimes they slapped a different brand, Tokai, you know, whatever.
But they were Carina bodies though, weren't they?
No, they weren't Carina. They were made out of that mahogany.
Oh, okay.
You go to guitar shows now, you'll see somebody with an Ibanez Destroyer, and he wants $6,000 for it, and you kind of laugh, and you come back, and it's gone. Somebody bought it. So, I don't know. I mean, I wish I had one. And then you get to a Martin O-42. That's got a 13% return. Bigsby's. Now, here's something crazy. Like, these Bigsby's are so hard to find. But if you have original one, like one that was made before 52-ish, you know, when they're actually one of a kind, probably got somebody else's name on it. But you got one of those, that thing had a return of like 13%. Those things go up. You know, those are $250,000 guitars too. 1985 Hamer, the standard, the Hamers, has a return of about 12.8%. It used to be that the 75 early ones had the best returns, but now the 80s are kind of creeping up on there because they're cheaper. You know, it'll cost you $20,000 to get a 70s Hamer standard, but it's only about $9,000 to get the 80s Hamer standard.
Yeah, they're great guitars too. Hate those Hamers, glued neck, you know, they're
great. I love them.
I was just looking at your list here, going down a little ways, Charvel Model 4.
Yep.
So here's an example of a guitar a guy can get into real reasonable right now. And it's over the last 10 years, it's gone up over 10% a year.
You know, it's funny because you know why I added that to the 3000 is because you guys did an article on it in VG Magazine. I said, hey, these are pretty cool. And I looked. Yeah. And I looked at it in detail, and I was like, holy cow, these things are really, you know, for a grand. And that's probably the cheapest guitar on this list.
Those Charvels and Jacksons, you know, the pointy headstocks that everybody dogged out, you know, for years and years. They were high-dollar guitars and very well built, and a lot of people played them and stuff. So I've always kind of wondered why they didn't really do much. But now that the age group that admired those is catching up with them.
Yeah. And I love it. And then you see that Kelly Custom 1986 for $4,000. That thing has a return rate of about 12%. These are all the guitars that have beat the stock market in the last 10 years. So you got the Kelly Custom 86, Hamer Standard 75, the Music Man Eddie Van Halen 1991 beat the, of course, a Fender Broadcaster. Of course, that's $150,000 now, but you're going to beat the stock market with that one. Rare color Jazz Masters, rare color Jaguars.
Yeah, you got some Deans on there.
Yep. The Gems, you know, the Ibanez, the Y2K DNAs, the Jazz Masters, of course, from anything pre-CBS Jazz Masters beating the stock market. Gibson 355s with PAFs. Those beat the stock market right now. Those are like the earliest ones, late 50s. Gibson L5s, of course. L5s, you know, the more desirable ones, you know, people pay more for the Lloyd Lohr ones, but it's actually those ones that came out in the late 20s that are actually 1931s. you know, how they realigned all the dating on these things. Those are actually worth $30K and they give you 12% a year. Dean ML Bursts from 77, returning better than the stock market. Dean V Bursts, the Martin N20, that one that Willie Nelson plays. That thing is that thing's a big return. And then the White Falcon, the Gretsch White Falcon, the mid-50s with a single cut. Those will be in the stock market now. The electric 12s, anything offset that's got color is going to beat the stock market. Some of the Gibson ES250Ns, slanted headstock. Well, you can't get that. That beats the stock market. You can't get that. But Les Paul Juniors beat the stock market the last 10 years. Burns Bison. Here's one that kind of, you know, for $3,500, Burns Bison from the 62. That thing beat the stock market. The Model 4 beat the stock market. The 0018s from early 40s with scallop bracing beats the stock market. Les Paul's mid-50s, anything Les Paul. Les Paul mid-50s did really well. Anything that's got P90s in it. Duosonics, of course, are going crazy. Here's like the latest one is the EVH yellow on black. Remember the one that Charvel made? Those things are now beating the stock market. Rickenbacker 325s. Well, good luck finding one that's from 58 that has a solid top. It beats the stock market. Any Flying V stuff from the 70s is doing well. Rare colored White Falcons, anything colored, Jazzmaster. Here's the Guild. Here's the first Guild that really breaks it, even as that Bluegrass D50, 63. That thing beats the stock market. Oh, here, the Randy Rhodes, the Jackson Randy Rhodes USAs, yep. Beats the stock market. It's just fascinating, you know. Like we say, you know, that you don't have to pay over $20K for something that's going to keep amassing value. There's stuff down there for $1,000 that'll keep doubling in value every 10 years. And that's kind of, you know, but you're not buying it for that. I hope most people buy in their guitars because they love them. They want to play them.
Right. And one thing too on that holding the value, I mean, if it's a popular guitar with current musicians and stuff, I think it's going to, at the very least, hold its value.
Right.
You know, you're not going to lose it. If it's some, you know, especially back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, there was a lot of oddball stuff that came out. And it just, you're kind of rolling the dice or something like that. But
In the 2024, we give the indexes for all the weird stuff because that kind of made a move in this COVID era, like the Travis Beans and that stuff all made a big move last year. So we put it in there. You know, these price guys, we're going to try to keep current. Whatever's happening then and there, we're going to try to capture it with showing you what the market on those looks like, you know, and you might see that big pop all of a sudden. And Does that mean it's going to pop every year? No, it never has. But Stratocasters, Les Pauls, SGs, 335s, they always maintain upward momentum. Even in down years, they come back, you know, they have buoyancy, as we say. And that's important to know that, you know, if you're collecting, you know, collect something that will always be buoyant, at least be worth, you know, what you paid for it. So, So that was fun. A good review, I think, of this year's price guide. And I implore everybody, buy that price guide, you know?
Well, one thing I want to point out too, you mentioned digital magazines earlier. We do a digital version of the price guide too. And if you buy the price guide from Vintage Guitar on our website or whatever, you get the free digital with it.
Right. And that's color. I think it's all color anyway.
Yeah, the digital one is all color photos, yeah. But what's beautiful about it is it works on your phone. So when you're out pawn shopping or going to store, you don't have to whip out this book.
You can just log it in.
Yeah. Yep. And also our website's got an amazing amount of information. We've got literally 37 years of articles on there. We don't have everything on there that we've done, but I have no idea how many articles are on there. So if you want to dig deeper in some of the brands we talked about or whatever, it's there and that's all free. So Check it out.
If you email us, you use this guide and you think that there's something that should be in there that's not in there, you email me and I'll get back to you that first, you know, within hours and I'll let you know whether it's going to, you know, it's something we can do or not do, you know, send pictures, you know, people are always sending me pictures and Doug Yellowbird is great about.
The most popular page on our magazine every month is we call it Reader's Gallery, where people send us pictures of their collections. And we're always looking for photos, more stuff for that. So mm-hmm. if you have, it doesn't have to be your whole collection. You know, if you got a couple favorite pieces or a story behind them, it's, we love that stuff. And you can, if you look in the magazine, you can send that stuff to us here at the, at VG, and just, we love that stuff. So.
Yep. And we, and you know, like I get a lot of email from people saying you should do a story about this. Can somebody submit articles if they want to?
Oh yeah, we're always looking for ideas. Oftentimes we probably have covered it already too. So if you look at our website, you might find what you're looking for. But yeah, we're always looking for input. You know, we want to provide what people want to see and stuff. And a lot of our articles are 20 years old, 15 years old, and information, there's more information out there now, so they need to be updated or whatever. So mm-hmm. Yes, we're always looking for ideas and suggestions.
Yep. And I use those Vintage Guitar Magazine archives all the time. Usually when you Google something, the first thing comes up is a Vintage Guitar
right.
article. And you're like, okay, perfect. This is exact, has the picture, it has this, it has that. You know, because a lot of times people send me stuff. In fact, we have a Q&A in the magazine.
Yep.
Send those Q&As in. We love digging up stuff like that.
Yes.
We love it. I know that Ward Meeker likes that stuff. Doug likes that stuff.
Yep. We got a great crew here. They've all been here forever. James Jisker is our ad sales
guy. Right. If you got an ad, put it in. I guarantee you'll get results.
Yeah, I always.
Guarantee you'll get results.
I always say he's the new guy because he's only been here since 2000. So,
yeah.
But if you call in, you're going to talk to Martina Day. She handles most of you. That's who you talk to with your subscriptions, questions, and stuff like that. So Doug Yellowbird is the general manager and art director. He does all that amazing,
gorgeous. I'm always blown away because he'll send me like, here's the cover. What do you think? I'm like, oh, what do you mean? I think it's beautiful.
Right. No, he is a talented man.
And we got to give a shout out to Wanda Huther.
Yep.
The amount of work she does on the guide is just amazing. And
yes.
She's so patient. And I'm always amazed that she gets, you know, like I send these cryptic things back to her and she figures it out and she, you know, she got it right. Or she'll correct me. She'll say, did you mean this? I'm like, yes. Yeah. Yes, I did.
No, she's great at that. She's great. And she's been doing that for quite a while. And then Don Flanagan keeps our bills paid. So that's the most important part for a lot of our writers. Mm-hmm. So our writers, we just have a huge pool of great writers out there. And we have a core that we use most of the time. I just appreciate all the work that they have all done. And again, many of those have been with me, just like our advertisers. We've got advertisers that have been with us for 25 years. Mm-hmm. You know, and I've heard you mention this several times too about, you know, if you're leery of dabbling in online purchasing, you know, find a dealer.
Yes.
That's been around forever. He's going to be there if you have any problems. He doesn't disappear into the ether.
That's the one thing I hope that people get from these podcasts is that vintage guitar buying, you know, you have to have trust.
Absolutely.
And, you know, don't be that guy that buys something online and then it comes in and you're like, what?
The common thread of every complaint we've heard about where people got screwed was he always starts out, it was too good to be true.
Right. And it always is. So. All right, Alan, thank you so much.
You bet.
This was a lot of fun. And I implore everybody, get your VG magazine renewed. Buy that price guide, and your life in vintage guitar world is just blissful way to go through life.
Yeah, I appreciate it. We've been trying. I've been doing this for, I think this is our 38th year. All right. Take care, Ryan.
All righty. We'll talk to you. I'll talk to you later, soon.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye. So, again, this is the beginning of the second season. I am just thrilled with all the feedback I'm getting. I want to do a shout-out real quick to Shane Matsumoto, my good buddy, and he's the fifth Mooge, aren't you, Shane? He's the owner and proprietor of SER Soundworks in Chandler, Arizona. This is where we record the podcast out of. This is where all my band's albums have been done. And Shane is our producer. He's my buddy. He's everything. He's even does the vocals on some of our Psychedelic Mooge albums. He's been part of the Mooge forever. everything we recorded here at SCR. I can't thank him enough for all his help and all his support. Big shout out to my buddy, Shane. Thanks a lot, Shane.
Thank you for listening to Buy That Guitar, presented by Vintage Guitar Magazine. Please support VG for all they do for guitar players like us. Please subscribe, like, share, and comment on this podcast. I'd love to hear from you at ram@vintageguitar.com. See you again next week. Bye-bye.
The official Vintage Guitar Magazine 2025 price guide has partnered with 33 of the top guitar dealers in the industry to provide the most accurate values for thousands of models. This includes electric guitars, acoustic guitars, basses, amplifiers, effects, mandolins, and banjos. Whether your instrument is an investment or simply a piece you enjoy playing, it's always helpful to know what it's worth. If you're checking out a guitar at your local shop and want to know its value before making the purchase, this guide is your go-to source for all the details. Available in both print and digital editions, you can have the guide right at your fingertips no matter where you go. Use code BUYGUITAR25 to receive 15% off the 2025 price guide when purchased directly from www.vintageguitar.com. This offer expires on January 28th, 2025.